Hello and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the listen icon on the home page or the iTunes icon and listen from there. Today I have a gentleman from Ottawa, Canada. His name is Robert Aboud, and he is the president and founder of Wealth Strategies Investment and Financial Planning. It is a fee-based financial planning firm located in Ottawa. He has worked in the financial services industry since 1991 and has a Bachelor of Economics degree from Ottawa University. He holds the Personal Financial Planner designation issued by the Institute of Canadian Bankers and the Certified Financial Planner designation issued by the Financial Planners Standards Council. Robert helps his clients not only plan for the future, but also achieve life goals along the way. He is the recipient of Ottawa's Business Journal's prestigious 40 Under 40 Award and the Queen's Golden Jubilee Commemorative Medal. And with that, I would like to welcome to our program Robert Aboud. And Robert, it's a pleasure having you in Authors Audio today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Jake.
Well, Robert, we're here to discuss your book called No Regrets, A Common Sense Guide to Achieving and Affording Your Life Goals. And I can't think of a better time to have our program together to talk about how people should be able to manage their money, as we seem to be in a rather large downturn right now, and nobody seems to know exactly where the bottom is. So I think money management should be at the top of everybody's list. So your timing is perfect.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, especially on the budgeting end, so people can gain control of their cash flow again.
That's right. Now, you found your way into the financial planning business because originally you went into banking. Is that correct?
That's right. Back many moons ago, I started off at the bank, and I worked there for about 5 or 6 years, and then decided to go out on the full financial planning end, where we could cover plans for clients that incorporated a lot more than just investments. It covered all their life goals and things of that nature.
Now, I know that you're located in the Ottawa area of Canada, and I'm sure you have many clients that come from that particular area, but can people access your services from anywhere in Canada, or are they pretty much limited to the area that you serve in Ottawa?
Well, it's a little harder to do for anywhere in the world because there's different tax laws and different retirement things for different countries. Yeah, more or less in Canada, we've got clients primarily in Ontario, Quebec, and British Columbia, and that's where our licensing lies too, because after we present the plan, if they want us to assist them in managing their money, we have to be licensed in each province where we have clients. So far, those are really the three provinces where we have most of our clients now.
Robert, it'd be interesting to know, when people come to see you, how many of them have actually been to a financial coach or financial planner before?
Well, I think everyone thinks they've been to a financial coach or a financial planner, but I can tell you, in the 12 years I've been doing this, I ask clients to bring with them a copy of their financial plan, and I have never seen one yet. So I've seen investment proposals. I've seen leverage investing proposals. I've seen a bunch of interesting, colorful papers, but I've never really seen a full financial plan. So it would really stun me the day I do see one. It's a sad thing, Jake, but it's the truth.
Well, I think that it's very interesting. Our society has gotten used to so much debt and credit card debt and every other kind of debt, debt on their mortgages and so on, and then reverse mortgages and all this kind of stuff. And now is the time, of course, when people really have to have a solid grip on where they stand and can they afford to live the style that they're used to living. Now, you do mention the five biggest mistakes that people make in financial planning, and maybe we could very briefly touch on that if you'd like to.
Sure. One of them is they really don't have a clear idea of what they want to achieve with their money. Like when you think about the way we typically operate as humans, as Canadians, we go out, get a job, we work, money comes in, money goes out, but we haven't really set an objective as to what we want this money to do for us. You know, what are the goals associated with the money? So that's one of the things that if you never put a concrete objective to it, you never really feel if you're achieving anything. Also, and the second one, which I would say is by far the largest problem in North America, is investors don't have control over their monthly cash flow. So typically what happens, again, we work, money comes in, money goes out, and for most people, they have no idea how much goes in, how much goes out. Pretty much they spend till there's nothing left in the account, and then they know that it's at the end, and they either have to move over to the credit card or into overdraft to continue to spend for the rest of the month. And I'll tell you, when you think about yourself like a business, and you think, if I was a business, wouldn't I have to know how much, you know, revenue I bring in every month and how much expenses I put out, or else you wouldn't be in business for very long? And individuals just never think that way. We just go out there, work, spend, and cross our fingers that there's a couple of dollars left at the end of the month. The third biggest mistake people make is they delay making financial decisions. A lot of times people procrastinate and just can't come to a final decision on what they want to do with their money, and they overanalyze and they dissect things in 10 different ways. And I can tell you now's a perfect time to actually cover that, Jake, because we're at a time in the markets where there's a heck of a lot of investor stress, anxiety, and people don't really know what to do with their on the investment side. They don't know what to do, so they're frozen like a deer in the headlights. And you know, freezing like that, we just really don't move ahead somewhere. A decision has to be made for the long term. Like people who are investing now, even if the market came down another 20 or 30%, if you're not actually touching that money for a good 15, 20, even 10 years, it's still a great time to invest. Things are still down, you know, a good 40, 50% from what they were a year ago. So, you know, once we make the decision, we can then move ahead with all the objectives we want. The fourth biggest goal, biggest mistake, is people have no formal plan for achieving their financial goals. So when you think about it, we spend a lot of time planning our trips. We go on the internet, we shop around different sites, we look at itineraries, we look at the hotel room, we look at reviews, a good 5-6 hours at least on booking this. I would challenge many people to figure out how many hours they spend on their financial future during a year, and I bet that they probably spent more time either shopping for a computer or booking their holiday. And without planning for your financial goals, you don't know if you can even afford the holiday or the computer. So you kind of have to do that first before you go out and do the other things, which take up so much of our time. And the final piece of the puzzle, the fifth biggest mistake, people actually don't seek professional advice on the whole financial picture. What I found from being in the business for so long now is that people go to financial planners or investment advisors or the bank or a broker really with no expectations, because they've never really been told what's out there, what they should be looking for. And they're really expecting just advice on their investments, which really that is a very small piece of the puzzle. The bigger pieces of the puzzle are when they want to retire, how much they need to save every month, are they properly insured, reaching life goals, controlling their cash flow, making sure their estate's properly structured to save to make sure it passes on to the next generation so well. And it's so easy to get this advice. You know, in Canada and around the world, there's people called Certified Financial Planners, or CFPs, and it's the only internationally recognized designation. And we actually have obligations as CFPs that we have to do plans in a certain way. Not saying that we all do that, but we're supposed to. So when you at least go and see a CFP, you should get some form of financial plan that covers all those things we just discussed.
Makes me wonder, knowing people, do you find that a lot of people are coming in to see you when they, you know, the nuts and bolts have basically fallen off the car and they don't know which way is up or down, and they're coming in and saying, Robert, like, there must be something wrong with my portfolio. I can't pay my bills anymore. You probably get some of that, do you?
Yeah, it's a breaking point, actually. What usually causes somebody to come in is debt. And these are not, the people we see are not people who are not, you know, they're making quite a bit of income. The typical client we see, because we charge for our plans, typical clients make over $100,000 as a family, and in many times well over that. And they're still having financial difficulties because they've never put the focus on what do we want to get out of this whole thing with our money. And what they wind up having, you know, at age 48 is a house with a big old mortgage on it, a big old line of credit, a couple of credit cards, and a leased car. And at 48, that isn't really where you want to be if you're looking to retire at 55. Something's got to change, you know? So, you know, typically people have been working a good 20 years before they come and see us, and I think it's that point. It's usually they turn 40, they're really beginning to feel tight every month in their bank accounts, or they turn 50. It's a milestone that usually makes people think back, makes them nostalgic and say, okay, I got to clean this up. And that's when they come and see us.
Well, I'm only guessing, but I'm wondering if it's, you see a lot of this where people, you know, get into spending habits that might be in their budget in good times, but if they get in over their head or the economy changes, that a lot of people don't change their spending habits. They don't cut back, and they just simply go more into debt to keep up that level of existence. Do you see a lot of that in your business?
Yeah, people certainly have their habits. You hit that on the head, Jake. They stick to the habits. But what's interesting and very common is as we make more money, we just spend more. And unfortunately, we've fallen into a rut in North America where we used to have savings rates well into the double digits, you know, like 16%, 15% of our income we would save. Now we save 0%. On a national level, we're at the 0% savings rate, which is horrible, and we spend about 126% of what we make. Like, we have debt of about 126% of what our income is. So we're just on the wrong path for, you know, and it's not just about boring financial stuff. It's all about doing the fun stuff in life, you know, going on trips, buying a motorbike if you want to ride across the world, taking the kids to Disney World, retiring early, taking a sabbatical. But if we never just stop spending on stuff that we're going to stick in the basement, eventually, like that ab roller and the extra two TVs and things like that, if we stop spending on those, we can redirect the money to the things that matter. And I really think people haven't taken the time to figure out what actually matters to them. And then it would put everything else into perspective.
Well, I suppose, Robert, that all of us being human beings, we certainly get ourselves into fixes once in a while. And without a budget, and without sticking to a budget, people can get seriously into debt. I had a guest on my program a while back. We were talking about how people get really behind the eight ball in their credit card debt, which, as we all know, is the worst form of debt you can get into with, I don't know, anywhere from, I guess, 10 to 20% or more interest rates on the money.
Paying the minimum, yeah.
Do you find that people come in to see you that a lot of them are somewhat in this position where they've really outspent their what they can afford to pay back?
It's painful. And, you know, like a typical credit card debt of $10,000, it would take you 20 years to pay that off if you paid $150 a month. It gets worse. That would cost you $26,000 in interest alone. A $10,000 debt at $150 a month would take you 20 years to pay off and cost you over $26,000 in interest. Horrifying. mortifying. You know, as a mass group, we love to blame the credit card companies, but you know what? They put out a product telling you, look, we're going to charge you 18% if you borrow money, and we go out and do it. So they're really not to blame. We have to be responsible for our own actions. Now, typically, Jake, what people are doing now is if they have credit card debt and lines of credits and a car loan, given their value of their homes have typically gone up significantly over the last 8 years, they amalgamate all of that and put it into their home into one big mortgage so that the interest rate drops from 18% to maybe 5% on the mortgage, which is a very smart move to do. And it frees up cash flow so they can really focus on the one debt now, which is just the mortgage, and also have extra money to start setting money aside for retirement, travel, insurance, all those things that are so important to do. But what's about to happen, which is why this is a great time to do the interview, is that house prices, if the U.S. is any indication, and they always are about to drop about 30% in Canada. And that's not a big deal. They've gone up so much, it's normal that they should drop that much. But there won't be any room to amalgamate our debt anymore. And that's when we start seeing bankruptcies in Canada shoot through the roof.
Yes, I know, Robert, and there's just so many people out there stuck on using credit cards for so much shopping and only paying the minimum. And right now, because of the way the economy's going now, I hate to see what you're going to walk into your office. I'm sure it's not going to be pretty.
It's an endemic all over the world, for sure. And you know, going into this, people, because it hasn't hit us yet, you know, we've got a couple of months till we really feel the factor. People should really be trying to tighten up their cash flow and their balance sheets, pay off debt, build up cash. Imagine, you know, I don't think people remember what it's like to go through a real recession. And I mean a real one, like in the 90s. Not like, you know, we had one, they say, in 98 and in 2001. Those weren't recessions. In the early 90s, it was a real recession. People got laid off. Unemployment was up in near the double digits, but not there. You know, there were no help wanted signs anywhere. Now you still see help wanted all over the place. People aren't ready to live. Like if all of a sudden, if I ask most people, what would you do if you had no money coming in, no salary coming in for the next 2 months? Could you survive? 95% of people, the answer is no. Because, I mean, certainly we could take from our credit cards to do it, but certainly not the cash built up. So it's always good to prepare for these things that are always coming. It's typical of a business cycle.
I think you're absolutely right, Robert. I don't think anybody predicted, including some of the top sources, that this so-called little housing problem that they have in the United States would have blossomed into a worldwide economic crash, really, is what it is. You know, I still remember my mother telling me when I was a kid that, you know, you save your money up if you want to buy something, and if you don't have enough money, you don't buy it. And when you finally get enough money, then you go out and you buy what you want. And I thought, oh,
sounds simple,
like
doesn't it?
Crazy idea. I can't let, you know, like. But anyway, it turns out my mother was right about this. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people haven't listened to their mothers probably. And now we're all, many people are in deep trouble, aren't they?
You know what? Your mom and everyone's mom and dad who are in their 40s were the generation that actually, the thought of having a $200,000 mortgage would absolutely send them into the cardiac unit. It would finish them off. Credit card debt didn't exist with them. If you didn't have the cash, you didn't buy it. And that's what we've lost in our new generation. We've just completely lost the fact that you're supposed to have the money to be able to buy something. And it's easy to fall into the trap. You know, it's just so easy. The marketing, the ads, the ease of credit, and that will stop being so easy.
Well, I like the fact that each chapter has a little saying, a little aphorism before the chapter, and I like the one that Jefferson said, that basically you never spend money until you have it. And in our society today, that is just almost a completely unknown paradigm. The advertisers are constantly pushing people to buy things that probably 90% they don't need or can't afford or will go into debt for at high interest rates. And I think that now people are really starting to see that, we've got to pay this all back. This thing just can't go on forever. And I think that's the point we're at now. Would you agree with that?
I certainly do. I think forgive the saying, but the drunken party's over. We've been spending like drunken sailors, and we're sobering up now saying, oh, goodness, I've got $40,000 of this debt, and I don't even know what I bought. Because it adds up a little here, a little there, and, oh, what the heck, let's just buy these two tickets to go see the Ottawa Senators. A hockey game might cost you $350, but you say, what the heck, I want to go see the game, and it just keeps adding up. And the idea of the book is to help people do all the fun stuff they want to do in life, but to do it in a really smart way where they don't have to borrow and they live on cash again. It's so easy to do it. It's so wonderful to feel in control. When we're done with clients, after we've done a financial plan for them, usually it's a sense of relief because at least they know where they're at versus I have no idea, it's a black hole. And the book is meant to make it easy for people to kind of put everything into perspective. I think we all need to stop, take a breath, and figure out what's really going on and turn off the radio and the TV for a while and don't listen to any ads.
What you're saying makes absolutely perfect sense. If you want something and putting it all together so that you have a plan in order to get it, it just makes perfect sense, I think, to most people. But then on the other side of the equation, we have the merchandisers and the advertisers and the banks and whoever else is out there that wants to dip into your pocket, and they have all sorts of little tricks and games to play. Come on in and get it today. Don't put a dime down. We're not even going to bother you until a year from now, and then of course you can pay it off. Well, fact of the matter is that in a year from now, most people don't have any idea what the strength of the economy is going to be or what their particular job situation may be. And it's just a big gamble on their part, and people are finding out that gamble can sometimes even lose their house. So this is a very important issue for people.
Exactly. Nobody takes the actual moment you're talking about right there to just get over the quick emotional side of it. The sale will be there in a year. It isn't if you walk away today, the price is going up by double. The sale will be there again. Don't worry about it. In most cases, if people are about to buy something and they just take a week to think about it, they might find that, did I really need that? And my goodness, Jake, do you know that we... Actually, I was driving by one of the main streets here in Ottawa, and I noticed this extremely large storage facility being built. So it's about a six-story thing for us to rent out space to store our stuff. We've gotten, as a society, we're so fortunate. We have so much stuff, we actually need to rent out space to put our stuff in. It's incredible. Well, of course, because we've got so much stuff. It's we're very fortunate people, and I think we may not realize it. And at a certain point, if the stuff is so much that it needs to get out of your house, you may want to look at selling your stuff or giving it to somebody less fortunate, because there's an expense of just storing your stuff. And Jake, on the topic of buying now and gimmicks and all, one of the things that I found really interesting is about 15 years ago, you didn't lease cars. Only business people leased cars. We bought our cars. All of a sudden now, everybody leases their car. Something very strange happened there. They got us to buy into the fact that we don't need to own it. We just need to lease it because we could buy a much fancier car and only pay $600 a month as opposed to $1,200 if we took the full loan. And, we're on a perpetual cycle now of we never own the car. We just, when the lease is up, we just lease another one.
Well, it seems to be the habit of a lot of people nowadays to just lease a car for 4 years, keep it around for a couple of years, and get tired of it and pay a penalty to upgrade to a car of that new year, and away they go. And this seemed to be okay for companies, but for people, I don't think it really pays off.
Exactly, and as we all know, and it's stunning, we all know that the minute you drive off the lot, you can knock 15% off the value of the car. Like it's just a car is certainly not an investment. A car is a piece of machinery that takes you from your house to wherever you want to go. That's all it is. It certainly isn't an investment. It goes down in value. So leasing is like renting a car. And imagine the $600 people spend on leasing if you redirected it to retirement. You know, you could retire maybe 10 years sooner. You know what? You got to sometimes put things into perspective. Do I get the Honda, you know, the Honda Civic, and retire when I'm 55? Or do I get the BMW and retire when I'm 71? And once it's in perspective, it might make the decision much easier.
Well, I guess to make a long story short, Robert, that's why you wrote the book. A lot of people are not aware of how they're spending their money or investing their money, and one day they wake up and realize that they're in pretty big trouble, and that's when they start searching Robert Aboud out, right?
Right, make it all happen. And the whole idea is to... It's really exciting when you look at something as a whole in a very holistic way. And the cash flow, which is the budget, and budget has a four-letter connotation attached to it because nobody likes to be, you know, quotation marks, put on a budget. But if we don't control what we spend, then we can't do all the other fun things in life. So in the book, what we try and do is, there's one system that's worked for years and years. And you know, Jake, if your mom's still alive, you could ask her if she's heard of the envelope system. And many years ago, they were doing this envelope system where you would pretty much get paid and take a portion of your pay, you take out cash, and put it aside in little envelopes for entertainment, for clothing, for groceries, and for the purchases you might wish to make, like pocket change and things. And they used to live on cash. And in the book, what I'm trying to do is get people back to the envelope system, which is a budget, but not really a budget. It's just, you don't have to keep any kind of receipts, because that's what makes budgets fail, is when we try and keep receipts for everything we ever bought and figure out, you know, how to control our spending from that. Keeping receipts just tells us what we spent in the past. A proper budget or a proper cash flow control tells us what we're going to spend in the future. So what we do is determine, okay, I'm going to spend $200 a month on clothing, and I'm going to budget $200 a month for gifts, because I know at Christmas and the holidays I spend a lot, so I better save monthly for that, or else I'm going to get that January MasterCard bill that's going to make me, you know, feel nauseous in the when I get it after I bought all these gifts. So we set people up so they're saving for all these goals monthly and well in advance, so there's no shocking surprises when they need to spend the money. And it's really easy, the envelope system, much easier than people would think.
I guess the reason why you have a job and why we're talking about this, all these issues, is because you know, people are normally, sometimes are just not rational, and they jump out and do something crazy with their money. But what I'd like to know, getting down to practical advice, is how would you recommend that people structure a budget, like based on percentages of their income, so on and so forth? There must be some kind of rough formula or something like that that they can start to follow?
It could be. What we try and do for the cash flow and how to set up a budget is, and we try and keep it as simple as possible, and the book does too, so that it isn't too complicated, because then it won't work. Like Weight Watchers, right? It's a pretty simple diet that seems to work and has lasted the longest. So we ask people, how much do they make per pay, you know, net. So every 2 weeks I get $1,000. So, you know, we know they make about $2,000 a month. Then we go through expenses with them on their mortgage or rent, property taxes or condo fees or whatever. And we go through a listing, and it's in the book, of typical expenses that people have, like there's a listing. And they should mark down what they would be comfortable spending going forward. You see, so on entertainment, if people say, well, I'm currently spending $600 a month being entertained, well, when they go see a financial planner, the financial planner is going to say, well, you need to save. You said you wanted to retire at 63. You need to save $600 a month to an RSP. You don't have $600 a month. You're short. We need to trim some spots. So that's when people might say, okay, I'm willing to reduce my entertainment to $200, and I'm willing to reduce my clothing from $500 to $300 so that I could retire on the date I want. So there's certain key numbers we need to know before we can work all the other numbers. And one of them is, you know, if retirement is up there in your objectives, we need to know your magic number. How much do you have to save every month to make that dream happen? You know, typically the big wish is I want to retire at a certain date, and that they want to pay for their kids' education and they want their mortgage gone. And then all the fun stuff. But typically those are the big ones that require money, is when am I going to retire? So once you know how much you need to save every month for that, then you can work backwards to how much do I spend on entertainment, gifts, clothing, and all the fluffy expenditures versus the fixed expenditures, you know, like mortgages and house insurance and things like that.
Well, now, okay, Robert, you are a professional financial planner, financial coach, and you sit down with the average couple or family or whatever and try to lay out what is a reasonable budget and solution for them. Now, is this a one-time thing, or do people usually have to come back in every 2 or 3 or 4 years to really have another look at where they're at with you? Is that what you recommend?
Perfect. Great question. The way it works with us, at least, and the way it can work with anybody who's, you know, who actually does full financial planning, is when you first go see them, they'll collect information from you and actually tell you how much it'll be to prepare the plan itself. And then once they present the plan to you, then part of the plan usually includes managing your investments, placing life insurance, helping you with your budget, maybe changing your investment mix, things like that. And if you want this person to help you do all those things, you can have them do that, just like an investment advisor. And you should meet with these people. Like our clients, typically we meet with them twice a year, and we do what's called a semi-annual review. And in that review, we take a look at their retirement, if they're on target, and where they're at versus where they're supposed to be. Because we have a plan drawn out that says in 2010, you need to have X amount of dollars saved up for retirement. It's pretty easy. We print a statement saying, here's how much you do have, here's how much you're supposed to have, are we on target? And we go through a process like that that includes life goals, retirement goals, financial goals. We also go through debt to make sure they're staying on side. Because, you know, it's really good to have regular meetings, like twice a year, with, you know, a certified financial planner, a personal finance coach, somebody who has an interest in assisting you, because it kind of keeps it clean. You know, if you're going into debt and you know you're going to see them in a month, you're probably going to take an effort to try and pay that down. Something about having a third party involved in your finances that makes things a little bit different.
Well, I guess it's a lot like looking at a hockey game in between periods. The coach is coming back at the players and saying, look, you're doing this right, but this is way off our game. And so you have to bring people back into focus every time they come and see you, which they wouldn't do normally, would they?
Exactly. And it's their plan, like you say, Jake, they agreed to do. Because we don't say, here's what here's your goals, here's your wishes. We ask, hey, when do you want to retire? When do you want to do this? What are your, let's prioritize now. What's the most important thing? And then when we review, we say, okay, you said this was your number one goal. Here's where we're at. What's going on? And many a times, you know, oh, you're on target. That's great. Let's move on to the next thing. Yeah, it can be very, very helpful. And like I said, most people feel there's some form of control over it. And even with the envelope system, if they do it and they fall off the wagon once or twice throughout the year, at least they're following some form of a system. It's so much better than nothing. And things do change. People's objectives or goals might change a little bit going forward, but it's always good to be reminded of the key ones and when we were looking for them. You know, one of the quotes I put in the book that I took from, you know, very smart people that I could find quotes on, because I think they say great things, and it's, don't buy things, buy freedom. And I just love that quote because it's so true. We have so many things, but we may not feel that we have a freedom from our money. We may feel that we're almost a slave to money.
Well, we are getting close to wrapping up the program, Robert, but I would like to say about the book that it's beautifully done. It's very concise. The book itself is not expensive, and it has a little chap at the end of each chapter. It has a little summary explaining each point in the chapter, and I think if you spend a little bit of money on the book, it could end up saving you thousands of dollars a year in misplaced money or bad investments or whatever. And for those of you out there who have larger and larger incomes, Robert's business is something that you might want to take a look at after reading the book too.
What I tried to do is write a very short, simple to read book that you could read on a flight from Ottawa to Toronto, which is less than an hour, and actually get something out of it in that time. And on the website, lifegoalsplanning.com, I've put up free resources like an Excel version of the budget so people could work through, and some other resources to figure out how much they need to save every month to retire, things like that, to try and get people in the mood of looking at their life goals and to take a break from the busy life and think about themselves for a change.
I have one thing that I would like to ask you. I should ask you before we leave, Robert, and that is that we are living in times right now that are pretty gloomy for a lot of people. We're talking about huge businesses like Chrysler and GM and Ford and many, many, many other businesses perhaps closing or going bankrupt and so on. What is your feeling about these times we're in, and what would you tell the listeners from your perspective there?
I'll tell you, if what I think happens, yes. I don't think as high, but you know, if we walk through a typical scenario of a recession, and recessions are very normal and extremely healthy, I'd want your listeners to know that recessions are a very, very good thing, because what they do is they cleanse and clean the system. When we go 17 years without a recession, people forget that things can go bad. People forget that if we're too greedy, we develop products like credit swaps and all these other products that backfire and cause financial turmoil around the world. And it gives us a chance to put things back to normality. So in a recession, people lose their jobs. That's the way it goes. You know, so typically people are going to lose their jobs. The minute they lose their job, they can't afford their house anymore. They might be able to last 2 or 3 months, maybe 4 months. And at that point, they've got to turn the keys into the bank. And that begins a domino effect where people are selling more homes. The prices of homes are going down because there's an oversupply. So the value of their homes go down. They now have more mortgage than they have a house. They give the keys to the bank and say, you can have it, foreclose all you want. I'm not interested in keeping it. And this happened in the 80s here in Canada. This isn't like, in the 80s and in the 90s. This isn't like it's something new. But in the early 90s, during the recession, the value of homes dropped by a good 40%. But nobody remembers this. It's all been washed away. Remember, everyone thinks investing in real estate is the smartest thing you can do. Statistically speaking, it's one of the worst investments. Shocking, but it is. Over the long term, it is one of the worst investments. It hardly keeps up with inflation. Shocks most people. It actually makes more sense to rent than it does to buy.
Well, I'm very glad we covered this, Robert, before we ended the program, because this is going to shock a lot of people. Because, of course, people are thinking about buying equity in a home, and that's why they buy. But you're saying that there's an awful lot of other factors that can you can actually end up losing all that, and that's true. Of course, we're seeing it today.
Well, when you think about it, you look at a typical scenario in Ottawa, and someone who may be able to rent a very nice townhouse or a condo for $1,300 or $1,400 a month. And many people think that's just wasted money that they're giving away. But built into that, the owner of that condo was probably paying $300 a month in condo fees, $250 a month in property taxes. That's already $550. Plus maintenance, repairs, renovations. And if you have a mortgage, the interest on the mortgage, it's a very very painful process. You know, renting is not at all a bad thing. People shouldn't feel bad if they're renting. It actually can be a very profitable thing. You can redirect the money you're saving from having a mortgage and paying for furnaces to something else, like taking a trip somewhere you might always wanted to visit.
Well, there you have it from the horse's mouth. All you renters out there, I want you to get out there and get your airplane tickets for January, February, and March, because you're going to be able to afford to go on a holiday. And unfortunately, this year at least, a lot of homeowners are going to have to get the blankets out and keep the furnace turned down and watch hockey, which is not such a bad thing either. So, but with that, Robert, I want to thank you so much for coming and talking to us on Authors Audio. We've been talking with the president of Wealth Strategies. His name is Robert Aboud. He is the president, and his book is called No Regrets. You can find the book on our website at Authors Audio at www.authorsaudio.com, and you can click on the book jacket to go right to Amazon and purchase the book that way. And again, Robert's site online is simply worldwideweb.wealthstrategies.com. If you'd like to get a hold of Robert and have a talk with him after reading the book or whatever, I'm sure you'd appreciate that. And this has been another edition of Authors Audio. And my name is Jake D. Steele. And until next time, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.